Actually, we could have introduced intuitionistic logic starting with a proof system like this, with a Gensen proof system, and then put some strange, or maybe not so strange, restrictions on the shape of the rules. And this is something that I was originally planning to do, but then I thought that it's not so obvious why you want to put those restrictions. What is the motivation, computer science, application, philosophical behind such restrictions? So we start in the same way as we did with modal logic. And we're first going to talk about semantics. But we will return to all this, maybe even to the proof of admissibility of contraction in this more complicated setting. And indeed, then you want your rules to be, then you want to invert this trick with inversion of the rules and height preservation. It's not going to be as symmetric, and you will have more rules to take care of. This is for future. So, we are going to start again with Kripke frames, but this time that this will be very special ones. You remember that we spent a lot of time talking about posets, partially ordered sets, and trees, and now they are our intended semantics. And the logic that we will talk about will have no funny connectives like boxes, diamonds, or whatever. It will have exactly the same connectives as you know from classical logic. They will be just interpreted in a funny way. I should perhaps add this intuitionistic propositional logic. In all of our lectures, we're interested in propositional systems. So, intuitionistic Kripke frame is just of this form where this thing is just partial order on W. And you remember the notion of partial order, at least from Hausaufgabe and for modal logic. So this is what we call such a pair with universe and partial ordering on it is normally called posset, partially ordered set. And just like before, we have the notion of valuation. But now, something funny will happen to those valuations. So, if you recall how it worked in modal logic, if you did not add any connectives like boxes, diamonds, or what else to the standard syntax, you will have the same logic as usual, the classical logic over Kripke frames. So it's clear that we must put some restrictions and also change the way some of the connectives are interpreted to obtain something interesting, something new. So first, let's say that we are only restricting attention to the upward closed subsets. So this is a proper, most of the time proper subset or subfamily of the collection of all posets of W. And I should perhaps write what it means to be a path closed. So let's say X containing W is upward closed if X in X below Y implies Y equals W. So now, the new thing, because those guys could be as well cryptic frames for normal logic, but valuations have to have some special features. So the set of atoms was written as atoms or propositional variables, or var, how did we write it? Atoms?
Propositional atoms. I think we call them atoms, right?
Yeah, yeah. At, okay. It's intuitionistic valuation. So if you said that a given atom is true at a given point, then in all future stages of development, if you think of things that are upward as future in, according to some possible course of events, then the thing that was true before must be also true in future.
Ugh.
Was this also what you wanted to say?
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. Otherwise it would tell the trigger. Right. So what is the logic that we are looking at? I didn't write actually an explicit definition of a set of formulas. And now we want to explicitly include all the connectives. We don't want to say immediately that you will just have conjunction and negation and everything else is abbreviation. And you will see soon that this, there is actually good reason for this. Is somebody still writing? So the set of formulas is now defined as atoms. I keep writing P rather than AB. I try to stick to AB convention, but forgive me if I switch to P and Q now and then. And then phi and psi, I have bottom, of course. Phi or psi, this is explicitly the formula, and phi implies psi. The only thing that I keep as actually is very much unlike in the classical case where I was having conjunction and negation only as primitives. Actually here, I don't need to add negation as a basic connective. Just like in classical logic, when you have this and this, you can define negation as implication to bottom. This will still work. So this is an ugly part. Right, so how do we define satisfaction of our formulas? You can probably guess that if I define atoms to be upward close, I want somehow define all the other, I want to define the semantics in such a way that the notation of all formulas, not just atoms, will keep being upward close. How one can achieve this? So, okay, if this is our model, then we say that Mw forces an atom, well, this is equivalent simply to W being in the pi of A. And it never happens, of course, that you force bottom, that you force false constant, it has always to be false. How about conjunction and disjunction? Well, actually, if you think about it, this restriction that you're only looking at the upward closed sets is not much of a problem. If you intersect two upward closed sets, you will still be upward closed, and if you form union of two upward closed sets, it will be also upward closed. So I can give a very normal definition. And and similarly for this charge. But we have implication. And now, if you recall how implication was defined in classical logic, this doesn't seem to work quite well now. So what was implication in classical logic again?
Well, not five orb psi.
Yes, so the part with orb psi seems to work well. But if I take plus ordinary set theoretical complement of something which was upward closed, does it always have to be upward closed in any upside, or can you be involved? I mean, even in the simplest, almost the simplest possible partial ordered set. Let's say we have two elements, for example, top and bottom, false and true, false below true, so bottom below top. The singleton containing top is upward closed, but if I take its set theoretical complement, bottom, it will not be upward closed anymore, right? It will be, if anything, it will be downward closed, but that's not what we want. So we have to do something, but it turns out that just a simple modification of taking I wanted to use the word interior, but I'm not sure how many people have seen something from topology, so maybe that's not what the value is. Okay, let's say it differently. So, in order to establish implication, you want to establish not only that if this guy is true here, and also this guy must be true here, you want to scan some all possible future stages of development. So, it has to be true that everywhere in future where phi holds, phi holds, psi must be true as well. It's x again. So one way to think about it, it's not very precise motivation, but it's coming close to intuitionistic way of thinking, is let's say that you are mathematician, idealized mathematician, or idealized mathematical community, which keeps establishing theorem and never establishes a false one. So you keep accumulating knowledge, but there are still things which you have not proved yet. So let's say that those things are Goldbach conjecture, or several decades before it wasn't clear, for example, in the Zermelo-Frenkel set theory, continuum hypothesis, whatever. But you know that you can still say meaningfully that if it is the case that generalized continuum hypothesis is true in Zermelo-Frenkel set theory, or if Goldbach conjecture is true in standard model of natural numbers, then this or that has to be true. So we don't know still which way it will go. We don't know still if we are going to prove or disprove Goldbach conjecture. And 100 or 70 years before, people did not know if they can show that the hypothesis holds in several pressure set theory, but you know that in every possible future stage of development where you succeed in proving this theorem, you will be also be able to show that some other theorems hold. And you see theorems stated quite often like this, that when people are discussing, or to these days when people are discussing the theorems in complexity theory, if P equals and P, not equal and P is true, then something else must be true. Some other hierarchy of statement of complexity classes does not collapse. So this is one way of thinking how intuitionists think about proofs. You think about validity. You have to have a proof for every statement that you assert as true. You learn the distinction between provable and true theorems, and implication has very special features. It acts like a function transforming a given proof of statement phi into a proof of statement psi, or an algorithm, if you wish. An algorithm converting a proof of theorem phi into a proof of theorem psi. It's a very different way of thinking about it. So let us see if funny things are happening under this interpretation. Let us think, for example, what happens to some of the standard classical laws, like the law of... One thing that we need to establish formally, I mean, I was saying this already, but we should say it as a lemma. We should state, of course, that the denotation of every formula, not just of an atom, is upward plots, because we need it all the time. So, for any phi, I keep changing the Russian conventions. Now I'm speaking W and W prime. If you have the phi holds up W, then you have that phi holds up W. We could again adopt this convention with square semantic brackets in a given model, the set of points that are all single satisfying this formula, and then we would be simply saying that for any phi, such square semantic brackets of phi is a member of the collection of upward plot sets. So, I mean, proof is by induction. I already gave a hand-waving argument. For atoms, it follows by definition, because those things are supposed to be upward plots. For conjunction and disjunction, it is a straightforward application of induction hypothesis and the fact that intersection and sum of upward plots is upward plots. And for this thing, we are using the fact that the notation of implication is defined in such a way. So let's see what is happening now with some of the standard theorems of classical logic. Do we have all the theorems that we used? So, for example, perhaps. We should somehow call the set of all the formulas that are true or valid in all models under this in this new phi semantics. So again, we define M for M forces or V satisfied in M if for any W in W M W phi and W L satisfied valid if for any pi we have the W pi is true, and this thing happens if for any and for any W L let us call the set of those formulas that are true everywhere, int or IPC roots, what is the differences? The name, the set of inductionistic theorem. Shall I call it int or shall I call it IPC?
I would suggest IPC.
You would suggest IPC. I don't want to suggest, because IPC suggests that it's calculus, so that we have already, like, I don't know, Hilbert style or Eisenstein. But okay, let's stick to the name IPC.
Yeah, calculus, of course, is bad, but I mean, that thing is called L anyway.
L?
No.
IPL?
No. The Gensenstein calculus for intuitions and logics. Is it called L?
LJ.
LJ.
Well, I mean, we are actually, if we want to distinguish between variance absorbing and non absorbing structural rules, then it's conventional to call them G1, A, I, G3, I, and so on. So, yeah. Okay, let's stick to, well, in Chatham, they call it int battle.
Yeah, well, then let's stick to
that. Int, sometimes also called IPC. So that if any of us, by mistakes, use this name, you know what's happening. I mean, of course, the disadvantage is that if you say int, then it's not clear you have, for example, quantifiers or not, whereas if you say IPC, mean iterationistic propositional calculus, although predicate calculus is derivated in the same way. So. Anyway. So, exercise or example. Is it true that for example, the law of excluded middle belongs to the options. Or the law of double negation. In fact, I'm talking just about one half.
You should first perhaps state how negation is.
Remember that negation of phi is, by definition, phi plus 4. Good. So actually, we should work out perhaps explicitly what it means. So what would be the satisfaction clause for negation then? Right? You have in the clause for negation, you can have the clause for bottom. So for that, so it's a good practice before we try to find counterexamples. So if you take this definition and plug it here, what would it mean? So this says that if for any y greater than w, the fact that phi holds a bar means that bottom holds a bar. But can this happen? By the definition of, it cannot, right? So we have implication to something permanently false. So this means, in fact, that
this may never happen.
That not only in phi, not only in W itself, phi must be false, but in all its successors, phi must be false. So it is not enough to say that intuitionistically, in order to say that I established a negation of phi, it is not enough to say that now have no proof. And obviously, this wouldn't be enough to say that you prove the negation of something. You have to have some proof, some algorithm, some mathematical construction which shows that however the mathematical knowledge, let's say, is going to develop in future, whatever theorems we are going to establish, adding phi would be to disaster. That it could never be. It could never be true in whatever happens. So maybe we should even state it by before we start this exercise, for example. No. If for any y greater than w, it does not hold the values. So, actually, maybe let's try some other formulas as well. For example, how about phi by not phi? And we could play this game better. How about not phi or not phi? But maybe let's first stick to this three examples. This. And it would be maybe even convenient when we have double negation to see what the, again, what would that be according to our satisfaction definition. So if you plug double negation here, it means that for any y greater than w, it is not the case that y is making the not phi true. But you can only fail to make not phi true if you negate this definition, if there exists a successor again where phi is true. So it's like for all exist kind of condition. Whatever future state of development I take, there will be still in the future of this state of development where phi will be true. This is for double negation. Okay, so let's take double negation. Let's stick first, for example, with a single negation. How do you think? Well, would I be able to find some counterexample, or there is a good argument such as the one that we have for axioms of K that it has to be true in every possible Rilke model of such form? Who is voting, or who is believing that we can find a counterexample for this? Who believes that it always must be true? Okay, so this is very illusionistic. Everybody's sitting next to the middle now. But so we have no proof, but also no counterexample for this. But I was already suggesting that our partially ordered sets can be extremely simple, and I already gave you explicitly an example when I was trying to convince you that negation of something which is upper close does not have to be upper close. That was this thing with bottom and top. Let's call them, I don't want to get bottom and top. Aha, this will be confused with atoms, x and y. And also bottom, zero. So assume that w is this form, and L is, well, it has to contain x and x, y, and y itself because it has to be reflexive. So this is the first non-trivial offset that is working. Does it make sense to think about single element offset? Can I do something, what do you mean? Can I do something funny with any formula which is a theorem of classical logic in a single element offset? Okay, we will return to this. So, I mean, this is clearly a very, very simple counterexample. If this is a counterexample for anything at all. So, the first idea is then to, if we have something which we are not sure if it should be theorem of inclusionism or not, then how about the low excluded middle, for example? Then you think of some valuation of A or not A. Can you think of some valuation of A where this, and some point in this model where this is going to be problematic?
You can make A true exactly at y.
Exactly. What is happening here? Remember that, oh, I still have this.
Let's go for the reference.
So we still, so we have this closed top disjunction. So in order to make disjunction true, inclusionistically, I must have either a proof for phi, or I must have a proof for psi. So it has to be true here that in order for this thing to be true, I should either see, I should either be already in the denotation of A, or I should be in the denotation of not A. We are clearly not in the denotation of A. Are we clearly in the denotation of not A, inclusionistic not A? I mean, let's recall again what not was here. You have to be not only, you have to scan not only the point at which we are now, but also all future points. And why A is not true here, it is true in at least one future point. So, yes?
Why is A not true at X?
Because P A is the singleton of Y, which is a quad closed set, right?
Ah, okay, because we fixed it to Y.
Yeah, this is what I meant by this. Maybe this is, maybe I should keep writing this so that nobody's confused. So X is not in the denotation of A. But it is not true that if you look at all possible Ys, in particular this very Y here, that is, that are its successors, they will be also outside the denotation of A. Right? So, how about the other guy? Well, maybe double negation is already complicated looking when you start thinking about it. So maybe actually we need an observation what it means to be true for a double negation. But no, let's try to avoid stating a general lemma or observation whether double negation is true. Let's try to work it out on our counted on our fingers in this very simple model. So is not A true at X or false at X?
Yes? It is true just because there exists a successor at which A holds?
Yes. Right? So maybe let's write it in more detail. So if there exists Y above X such that at Y not A does not hold, and indeed in this case maybe I should write Y prime so that we don't confuse it, this actual Y, and in this take Y prime equal to Y. So we have that not A holds at X, but as we have already established, A itself doesn't hold at X. So because of the definition of implication, we know that in order for implication to be true, it has to be true in all successors, but X is a successor of itself. It's important that partial orders are reflexive. So because we have at least one successor of X, namely X itself, where antecedent of this implication is true, but consequent is false. Therefore, not phi implies phi must fail. Do you think I would be so lucky with A implies non-A? Well, maybe it's a bit early to ask. I mean, so far we have not shown that any interesting formula at all can be intuitionism, right? So far we are only finding counterexamples. So maybe let's start with something simpler. How about A implies A? Will this at least be good? Maybe nothing implies anything. A implies A true. So,
well, if we look into this implication definition, then phi and psi are the same formula in this implication.
Yes, so of course, so for any y greater than w, if y makes phi true in model M, then y makes phi true in model M, right? It's this is a little interesting. How about phi and psi in place, right? Here we are getting a bit. Or how about phi implies phi or not, phi or psi? I mean, this is looking very much like some of the Gunsen rules that we were seeing, right? Same reasons plus the definition for conjunction, the satisfaction clause for conjunction. So, for any point, we have indeed that if it satisfies phi and psi, then by definition of conjunction, it has to in particular satisfy phi. Right? And this is precisely what the clause for implication. So this is true. So there are some theorems, there are some formulas that are true, there are some formulas that are not true. How about then this thing? Yes?
This element of it?
Okay.
Because if phi is true, then there exists that successor because the relation is reflexive at which phi is true.
Right, so it is implicitly using the definition of satisfaction for double negation. It was a single operator, and we have said that this for all exists. So, for every successor of a point where phi holds, there exists a successor of that successor. But this is the very same point, right? So maybe actually for this, because this were almost too simple to write down, maybe let's, in order to pretend that we are writing proper proofs, let's write down into what we stole this last observation. As I said, for those of you, because I know that a few people here well, even if you didn't hear about topology, you know what open sets of real numbers or rational numbers are, right? You know what it means to be open set. So it is also possible to define the notion of being open in partial other sets in the sense of being upward closed. So it is as if moving from the logic of all subsets, the Boolean logic, we are moving to the logic of open sets of reals, rational numbers, or some other topological spaces, whatever those things are. This is a good way of thinking mathematically about what intuitionistic logic is. So, let's finish. We only write it for this. Assume W, M and W equals phi. We want to show, in order to show MW plus 6.15. Yes, it will be okay. Consider any W prime greater than that. We need to show this is equivalent to a resistance of W prime prime such that W prime is below W prime prime. And wait, let's make sure that we're not getting lost in double negation. This is certainly something that caused us some problems in the past. So in order to show that, so that the definition of negation was that it has to be true that for all successors, this guy is not true. So we need to now find a successor where W, such a W prime prime, such a this impulse. But thanks to the lemma, I didn't give the name to the lemma or a number to this lemma, so fortunately we still have this lemma here. Maybe we can call it upward closure. And because of this part, it is enough to take the W prime at which we are. So we can take W prime equal to prime prime equal to W. So this gives us an idea how that location works. And now we don't have so much time because the natural next thing to do would be to recall the notion of bisimulation. Well, we, fortunately we have already defined them, so obviously the notion of bisimulation would work for arbitrary Kripke frames. It can be also applied in particular, oh, I wrote R here. Sorry, you should protest every time on that. So sometimes I'm going to write L for the positive relation, but I hope it didn't happen. And I also here wrote R. So in the part of intuition is whenever I write R, I will mean the positive. So we can of course apply the notion of bisimulation to such special relation which is Poisson there, and the goal would be to show again that two points that are dissimilar, that they are related by some dissimulation, satisfy the same intuitionistic formulas. So now our relation is transitive, of course, and by simulation we are not just looking at immediate successors, right? But this is in according, this is, this agrees with the definition of bisimulation that we gave originally, because we were talking just about any pair of related points, not, let's say, immediate successors. But maybe, because we only have 2 or 3 minutes now, maybe instead of trying now to write a new mathematical definition, I will start tomorrow with this. And maybe let me just make clear that this abstract or abstruse metaphysical motivation in terms of mathematical community establishing theorems is not the only reason why people are looking at evolutionistic logic. And it's also not only used or motivated as very funny language to talk about posits, in which you cannot express too much, probably even less than modal logic, right? One of the main motivation is that this idea that I was trying to suggest that proving that validity corresponds to having a prover, validity of implication should correspond to there being a computable function, an algorithm which transfers proofs from phi to transfers of psi, is also key to interpretation of intuitionistic logic in computer science. So if you want to have computational interpretation of proofs, we are most likely looking at intuitionistic rather than classical logic. And if you look, let's say, at the type system of any functional programming language, if you look at this implication collective as function space, conjunction as products, disjunction as union types, if you think what sort of type expressions are always inhabited, for which you can always find a morphism, you may realize that those formulas which are non-theorems of intuitionistic logic may be indeed problematic to inhabit in general, if you don't know anything about whether the original type is empty or not, whether there is some canonical inhabitant of it or not. Whereas for formulas that are inhabited, that are theorems of intuitionistic logic, you are always able to pull this trick. I'm not going to write too much on this because we are not going to discuss Curry-Howard correspondence, which is indeed the most common way in which intuitionistic logic is introduced or appears in computer science curricula. But let's just think of a simple, concrete example. Let's say this. So let's say now that this is a type expression, this is a type expression. This is the same type expression. Right? So we have a type expression A product B, and then type expression A, capital A, let's say. Would there be always a function, a morphism? Can you always create a lambda expression or a fun expression, whatever syntax you're using, whether you're using Scala or whether you're using Haskell or ML, which would show that this is always inhabited? So let's use the lambda expression. Some of you may know. So I want to have something which goes from this type to A. What would that be? Of course, X itself, right? So whether or not there is such an X is not a problem. And as soon as you give me a pen like this, I will be able to give you something of type A. That's great. Well, actually, this is not very nice. Maybe I should have to write X of type A times B and write explicitly projection. And well, if here if you have left and right injection, you also don't have to do it. But if you think of the type of a double negation or an excluded middle, I mean, try to think if you can always inhabit this. Yes?
What would the negation correspond to?
Implication to bottom. So if you have empty type. A type that cannot be inhabited. Okay, so this is where we have to stop and see you tomorrow.